7BR Part Heard. Hello and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. This week, we're taking a bit of a break from our usual programming and running a loosely themed day in the life type mini series to provide some insight into the experiences of our members. I'm Eleanor Day, Chambers Paralegal, and today I'm joined by James House QC. James has a national practice prosecuting and defending in high-profile criminal cases and is ranked by the Legal 500 and Chambers and Partners as a leading silk in crime. His practice encompasses all aspects of criminal law, including murder, manslaughter, high-value fraud and drugs operations, as well as sexual offences including rape, child abuse and historic offences. He has extensive experience and expertise in cases involving death by arson, as well as undertaking legally and factually complex cases of gross negligence manslaughter, including the medical profession or health and safety violations. James, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ellie.
Maybe to start with, you could take us back and tell us how you came to consider a career at the bar.
Well, the reason I came to the bar was down to a packet of hobnobs. First day of university, I went to university to do politics and international relations, but the chap put in the room opposite me in halls of residence had only ever wanted to be a barrister. He was doing a law degree, wanted to come to the bar, and on day one, knocked on my door, fancy a cup of tea with a packet of hobnob biscuits. Now, he's a very bright spark. He went on to become a barrister, very successful in clinical negligence and PI, so much so, loved the medical, now gone on to become an orthopaedic surgeon. So he's a bright lad, but he was also dyslexic, is dyslexic. And so whilst we became friends at university, he asked me to proofread his essays, his legal essays, for spelling, punctuation, grammar. And inevitably, over a few beers at night, we would argue the toss about what he had written. So we left university. He went off to bar school and then on to pupillage. I put a rucksack on and went off to New Zealand. I lived and worked there for a year, and way before email and mobile phones, we would write to each other, old airmail, and I said I hadn't got a clue what I was going to do when I came back, and he responded, "You're the most argumentative so-and-so I know, why didn't you come to the bar?" So I did. So when I got back, I applied for what in those days was the CPE, Law Diploma, conversion course. Got a place, went to Birmingham, did that, and then got into bar school.
Great. For our listeners, James off-air promised that he had an interesting answer to this question. And I have to say, I do think you've delivered. That is intriguing. And obviously, he is a good barrister because he persuaded you. Perhaps you could tell us a bit about what your practice looks like now.
Pure crime, and the vast majority of what I do, having taken silk, nearly 6 years ago now, involves homicide. I spend my days prosecuting and defending pretty much in murder and manslaughter cases. Also, again, sometimes when child cruelty cases where there's been a death. But I also do some sex cases still and multi-handed, multi-million pound drug cases, and then the occasional fraud case as well.
Why did you decide to specialise in crime?
When I made the decision that I wanted to come to the bar, the attraction was I wanted to be a jury advocate. That was what I wanted to do. I never wanted to sit behind a desk. I never wanted to do the advisory side of things. I wanted to be in court. And whilst, of course, many other fields, you do appear in court, not on a daily basis. And that's what I get to do. And there is nothing like an opening speech or a closing speech to a jury. There is nothing as nerve-wracking, even now, after 20-odd years of doing it, waiting for a verdict to come in. It's an absolute thrill. And also, very few people in this country get the opportunity to take part in our democracy. And on a daily basis, criminal barristers do that up and down the country, and it's an absolute privilege.
Why, can I ask, did you choose to come to 7BR then, as opposed to a purely criminal set?
Well, I was in a purely criminal set. When I got pupillage, it was in Leicester, and that was a multidisciplinary set. But after a few years, a purely criminal set emerged from that and another set of chambers in Leicester. And I was there then for 10 years. It was a great 10 years, But sadly, we were a small set and economies of scale and reduction in fees that we've all endured over the last 20 years meant it simply wasn't economically viable anymore. I was fortunate in having a good practice in the Midlands, and I had a number of possible opportunities of chambers to go and join when we made the decision that my existing chambers was going to close. What I did was I looked at the four or five sets that I knew practiced regularly on the Midland circuit. I then looked at all those barristers that I knew in each set who were sort of 5 or 6 years senior to me and 5 or 6 years junior to me, and asked myself the question, how many of those would I be happy to take over any of my cases? And when I looked at the list at seven, it was the only set of chambers where I would say, I'm happy with anybody. Any of those people I know will do the job properly and professionally and to the standard that I expect. So it sort of made the decision quite nice and easy, really.
And you still feel that way?
Very much so. It was the best professional decision I ever made. I mean, within 5 years, I went on to take Silk.
There's often a perception, I think, that the bar is quite London-centric, but you've mentioned that you've never been based in London. So I was wondering what your experience is like being based on circuit all your career, and how you've been able to build relationships with other members of Seven and the Clerks from a distance.
When I made the decision to move, I confess the biggest anxiety I had was not going into chambers every day, which is what I'd always done. Even on days when I wasn't in court, I would have gone into chambers and worked in chambers. And I wasn't sure how it was going to work out. And it was also, you know, it's, as I say, 10, 11 years ago since I joined chambers. So we're going back before digital case systems. We had email, but we still had paper files. And cases would be brought up on the train and somebody would literally pass them out to me on Market Harbour train station. And so you sometimes didn't get your briefs till 9, 10 o'clock at night for the following morning. So in those early days in chambers, it was difficult. But I made the effort to come down into chambers more than I do now, if I'm honest, because modern technology means we don't have to. But also many people from chambers come out on circuit, particularly in crime. So all the people that I would regularly see, I would see at court centres, and we would, you know, go for a beer, or if I'm now leading them, you know, they come round for some supper or whatever it is. So it was challenging to start with. Over the years, it's become much easier, and particularly lockdown's been great to this extent. The use of technology, the ability to have FaceTime, Zoom, etc., has been fantastic for somebody like me working out on circuit. And I get the advantage of I'm sitting here in my kitchen looking out at a beautiful countryside. What more could you ask for?
Could be worse.
Could indeed.
You mentioned that you took Silk in 2015. What motivated you to apply? Was it just a natural career progression at that point?
To some extent, I suppose you'd say it's a natural career progression. But actually, it was a little bit more than that. I had spent the preceding, five, six, or possibly even more years where so much of my practice had been cases involving sexual offences, and in particular, child abuse cases. And, you know, they're obviously extremely important cases to do, but they are extremely difficult cases to do. And to some extent, they can become soul-destroying after a period of time. And it was a light relief, genuinely, to get instructed in a drugs case or to be a junior in a murder. And I mean, I know that may sound daft, but it genuinely was, because it took you away from reading extremely difficult and harrowing material. And I reached a point one weekend when I simply said to my wife, I can't keep doing this for another 20 years of whatever my career's got left. I just can't. So I'm either going to have to apply for Silk and see if it works out. If it does, great. If it doesn't, then I'm going to have to move on and do something else for a living, because I simply can't endure another 20 years of just this kind, or 90% of my practice being this kind of work. So I threw my hat in the ring. I got lucky. I got it the first time of asking, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't regret taking Silk for a single minute.
Well, it's really fortunate that it did work out, but I think it's very humble of you to say that it was lucky. Can I ask, what does the application involve?
Well, certainly when I did it, and I think it is still pretty similar, you have to complete, when I did it, it was a 64-page application process. and you needed to identify 24 referees, 12 judicial, 6 professional and 6 fellow members of the bar or solicitor advocates. The application had a series of questions. You had a word limit and you had to complete those. You submit that, you wait for about 6 months, and then you get told whether you've got going to be asked for interview. You wait for another 3 months before you have your interview. You go down, you have an interview with 2 people. In my case, one Lord of Appeal and one chap who'd been the former permanent private secretary to the Prime Minister, so a civil servant, a senior civil servant. And then again, after your interview, you then wait for another 3 months or so before you finally get told whether you've got it or not. So the whole process takes best part of a year before from submitting your application to being sworn in. But for those who are considering it, I would give the same advice that was given to me by somebody who got it 2 years earlier. They said, don't just think you can complete that form in a weekend. You need to sign yourself out of court for a week and spend time doing it. You need to show it to other people. You need to invite them to give you suggestions. And then you need at least 2, if not 3 people to proofread it after you've completed it before you submit it.
That sounds like a mammoth task. How has your practice developed since then? Presumably it has sort of diversified in the way that you were hoping.
Yes. I mean, whilst I do still do 6 cases, by no means anywhere like the number that I did, because the vast majority of cases I do now, sadly, it involve the death of someone. It will be a diet of murder cases, manslaughter cases, cases where perhaps a child's died as a result of child cruelty or neglect. And then sometimes for a bit of a light relief, multi-handed, value, drugs, conspiracies, importations and the like. And then again, occasionally for that little bit of intellectual rigour, a bit of fraud. So whilst I do still do 6 cases, they're by no means with the regularity that I had to endure them.
Mm. What has been the most interesting aspect of your career today, or an element of the profession that you enjoy?
I have to say, actually, it goes back to something I've just said. The most enjoyable thing was taking silk. Yes, it's phenomenally hard work. You know, the challenges are at times seem overwhelming, but that's why you do the job. You get to take part in, you know, the most serious cases. They are hugely important for the victims, but obviously, sadly, in what I do, the victims' families and loved ones. They're hugely important for defendants. People often forget defendants' families because there can very often be innocents in it as well. And they're hugely important for society that, you know, those who do commit these crimes are held responsible, and those who don't get held responsible. So for me, that's the critical part of what I do. And if you sort of were to pick, I suppose, a couple of cases, as a junior, I was junior to Richard Latham QC in the Michael Philpott trial, where he, along with his wife, set fire to their house to try and blame somebody else for it without appreciating the magnitude of what they'd done. And as a consequence, their 6 children were killed. And he was found guilty, and she was, of the manslaughter. It was a case that received a huge amount of publicity because it was just devastating for all involved. And then not long after I took silk, I was involved in another case in which a fire had been set when a father and his 2 adult sons set fire to a flat in retaliation for something one of the occupants was alleged to have done. That occupant escaped, but a 17-year-old lad, a 16-year-old girl and their 6-month-old baby were killed in the fire. And they are just tragic cases right across the board. But the really important thing about those sorts of cases is that you achieve justice, whatever it might be, for the families. And in that case, since it happened, the father of the lad who died has emailed me every now and then to tell me how he and his family are getting on. He's a super chap. And those cases stick with you, and you discover that he's the lad who died had a younger brother, and he's gone on to be very successful. He's gone on to achieve well at school. He'll be doing his A-levels next year, and he wants to go on and become a barrister. And, you know, those are the sorts of things that come away from tragic cases, but with positives.
Finally, then, what are you most looking forward to next in your career? You were appointed as recorder on the Midland Circuit recently, I believe.
I was, yes. A couple of months ago, I was informed that I'd managed to pass through that process, which is, I was about to say, almost as bad. In fact, it is probably as bad as applying for SIL. You have to jump through an awful lot of hoops. That will be, I hope, interesting. It will be next year before I've been able to complete the training. There's some training courses that we have to do, which of course is now going to be online. So I suspect it will be Easter before I get to sit. But yeah, that will be the next challenge. It'll be something different. What I'm most looking forward to? A break at Christmas. Since I started back in the middle of August, I've pretty much gone back to back in trials. I finished one yesterday. I start the next one on Monday. It's great. And it has been a godsend, and I'm enjoying it. But actually, a little bit of downtime again with my family would be lovely.
No doubt you deserve that break, James. Thank you for joining me.
No problems at all. Thanks a lot, Ellie. Take care.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of 7BR's Part Heard. For more information and to listen to all our previous episodes, please visit our website.